Welcome to the Minute Maid Gang podcast. This is Steve Borsch, and we are at Chino Latino in Uptown Minneapolis, and I am here with Tim Elliott.
Hello, how's it going?
Great. Graham Thickens.
Hi, and I did not wear my chinos.
Good. Phil Wilson.
You know, it's going to be up to you, Steve, to cut in the appropriate music here.
So, oh, of course.
We've had to sort of quiet the music for Chino Latino. You're going to have to bring that in at the beginning.
We have.
Something Herb Alpert-ish.
Exactly. And in honor of our 100th podcast, that's right, I was actually going to bring a walker, but then I didn't want to carry it from the car, so I put on an old man mask. But also with us, Chris Lauer.
Hey.
Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Hola, ¿qué tal?
One of our co-founders, Dan Grigsby.
Hey, and I just want to point out, not only did Graham not wear his chinos, he didn't wear any pants.
Oh,
oh God, and I'm sitting right next to him.
Is that why it was so
cold? And then in our peanut gallery, Lisa.
not forever.
And who will be a guest, Lisa Foote and her husband, Brad.
I just want to say that Graham's kilt is very attractive.
Don't look underneath.
So we're doing this live at Chino Latino simply because it's our 100th podcast, which kind of surprised all of us. I think if you talk to any of us, you know, Steve was the one that pointed it out, because I think Steve is the one that actually types the title of the post every week, and he said, "Hey, what comes after 99?" So
yeah.
We thought we'd just do this live and invite anybody who wanted to come down, and so we've got some great guests and some great friends, and we're going to be having a little wine and beer and celebrating it. It's a much bigger deal probably to us than anybody else. But, we're very excited about the event.
And I'm also horribly disappointed. Graham had indicated that he was going to come and do shots in advance
before we
got started.
Here's Garrick.
Oh, my gosh. Here comes Garrick Van Buren, one of our co-founders. Garrick, how you doing?
I'm all right, Steve. It's good to be here.
Good to have you.
This is like the original. Do you think, Garrick, this is like the original podcast?
No, we can order
this.
The
nice. You know, like doing ambient podcast.
Right? The ambient podcast.
It may or may not be any good.
Right.
That's
probably
right.
Will not be listenable.
It probably won't be listenable. You know, it's going to be kind of like, you know, like Bernard's KQRS from Vegas thing without the nudity. Except for Grant.
I have no idea what that reference means, but whatever. Well, just to kind of set the stage, all of us were at a mini demo in what, May of 2008?
At O'Gara's.
No, it was earlier than that. It was in the winter.
It was in the winter.
Mini demo, yeah.
Mini demo at O'Gara's Garage.
At O'Gara's Garage. And
we drank too much beer.
We did. And we were up front, a couple of us, and we were spread out, and everybody was having a good time, which is, of course, it's a social event. But that was really the beginning of Minivate, was us all saying, yeah, you know, we should do something to showcase what's going on in Minneapolis-St. Paul or in Minnesota with respect to internet and web innovation. And that was the start.
Well, what's happened since is, I'm not sure how far the startup culture has evolved, really, personally. I don't know. Dan, what do you think?
So, this is the standard ask Dan the question about startup culture.
Dan gets to represent the startup community.
Well, and I'm a cheerleader for them, and I'm a cheerleader for them in a model that Garrick and I have talked a lot about, which is the, you kind of call it
your
the...
Ass.
The what?
The get off your ass model.
Yeah, the get off your ass model. There's this new book out now by Steven Johnson that's talking about where good ideas come from, and he introduces this concept of what's called the adjacent possible. And he sets it up by saying, you would never expect from the primordial earth a man to just pop right out of that. You have to go through all these little steps, get cells, get multicellular organisms, and so on, and then eventually you get complex life. And so I look at the Twin Cities in terms of adjacent possible. So 5, 6, 7 years ago, the adjacent possible was non-existent. There was no leave your day job and do something to support yourself. Well, these days you can point to dozens of little examples. I mean, hell, I'm going to promote myself here a little bit. With two other guys who just started an agency building web, mobile, and social software on contract. Well, that's a great sort of entrepreneurial way to get started in the Twin Cities community, and the environment supports that. We're a community with a lot of Fortune 500s. Those are Fortune 500s that are in retail and in healthcare, and places that make an investment in software. And so what I like seeing happening is people leaving stagnant jobs where software is an expense and going off into the space where software builds the business. And then what happens is a side effect of people creating little agencies and doing little side projects to get these small self-funding businesses. You have people who then think expansively, and we build that up into something interesting. So I think the Twin Cities, and I guess this is a long answer, is doing great because where before we didn't have anything in the adjacent possible, now we're starting to do this with multicellular organisms. I think it's great.
I think that's a great analogy. Although
I'm very wise.
Those who believe in another way, that suddenly things just spring forth magically. Right?
That's called organically.
Organically.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We're going to let it grow organically. Yeah.
Well, but I think it's worth pointing out. So people bitch about the lack of venture money in town. And they say, oh, there's no risk capital. I think it's unrealistic to think that we're going to spring forth and instantly be a Bay Area. And so we don't have any of the infrastructure. We don't have the muscle memory to know when to make good investments.
Nor do we have an ocean. So...
Yeah, but you know what? You know what? Part of this.
Where do we need it?
as part of this is, Graham and I are on this same mailing list for the PR, all the PR stuff, and we get releases. At least I do. I get probably 10 a day of internet and web startups, and I look at the value propositions, and it's just like, oh my God, you got funded. You know, they're in New York, or they're in the Bay Area, or they're somewhere where...
Maybe I could expand on something. Perhaps our greatest weakness in this community is actually our highly tuned BS detector.
That could be. But also the betting on the proven. That show me that the business model works.
The higher risk aversion, is that what we're saying?
Well,
that's BS,
right?
Yeah.
That project's not going to go anywhere. Well, actually, they give you millions of dollars. Like, you're not going to be around in 5 years. Period.
Yeah.
A pet food site would not start up here. Like one just did and got $5 million or something in the Bay Area. You hear that? Another pets.com.
Really?
I hope they buy the rights to the hand sock puppet. That was the biggest asset that Pets.com had.
Yeah, right.
I wanted the sock
let's
puppet.
Let's let another entrepreneur in the room kind of weigh in on this topic. Lisa Foote.
Who's got to work her way over to the crowd.
With Mix Moby.
Various other projects. So what do you think?
Yeah, interestingly enough, I was out in the Valley in July, and I attended Mobile Beat, and I was kind of under the wing of a very experienced mobile VC, and he has given us just fantastic advice and connections. And interestingly enough, of all the startups who were demoing at Mobile Beat in July, he thought they were all crap. He thought they were all, and I'm going to toot our horn a little bit, he said, they're all features. You've got a much more solid platform. So that's interesting to me, you know, that they were all kind of featurey. I don't know. I agree with Garrick. I think we've got better BS detectors here, and I think it makes it harder to be a startup, but I think it's much more disciplined and much more performance-oriented.
Maybe we have
versus flash-oriented.
Maybe we have smarter VCs here too. Then, if they're, or are any of those that you presented with, did any of them get funded yet? Or?
Yes, some of them were funded already.
Oh, they were
funded already. But remember too, this is all in the context of this angel seed phenomenon this year. So saying they're funded could be to the tune of $100,000, $200,000,
right.
Which is great. But
so do you think that we have kind of craftsmen in the form of developers here, and maybe we don't have the kind of the marketing savvy that the folks in the Silicon Valley and other places do?
I don't know if I would say it that way. I'd like some more weigh-in from others.
Well, maybe...
Chris Lauer.
I was going to say maybe it's outside of the tech realm, but I like to think of it as that true Minnesotan passive-aggressive investing, where we're very reactionary in this part of the world, and we do want to see it proven out elsewhere. But I have noticed with some of the industries that we're working with in retail, hospitality, that Minnesotans are scarily, we actually are trendsetters, and part of that is because we are considered flyover territory. There's no pressure here for somebody to really succeed because of the fact that we're not being squeezed by both coasts. We're actually being ignored by both coasts. And so for somebody who has enough time and not that being forced into doing, being forced to push to that level, they're not going to do it. They're going to do it on their own time, or they're going to play it safe in this environment. So many entrepreneurs are still sticking with their day job before going separate and launching their company. And maybe that's our nature here in the Midwest, but I think it's also part of the dynamic. Forbes just named us the most relaxed city in the U.S. And we're not, we don't have that pressure. And I don't know if that's the best thing for us to really grow our businesses, but I think it's also, it's, we have more opportunity here because there's not so much pressure squeezing out new businesses.
Well, let's talk about the difference of the difference, and you guys can weigh in on this. Let's talk about the difference between venture capital and angel investing. Should there be a higher tolerance of risk in the angel investing world as opposed to the venture capital world?
Well, there is inherently.
Does that inherent characteristic hold true here in Minnesota?
Not as much as it should. As it does in other parts of the country.
And this is something that happened to me when I was at Lawson. I would sit and talk with Maher Akeem, a guy who we bought his third startup, and he was from San Francisco, and Doug Olson, who's now the GM for Microsoft, running the office here. And the three of us would sit down and have lunch. And one of the things that was a head slap over and over and over again is when we'd be in these meetings, sometimes with 25, 40, 50 people, and the level of I don't get it was so profound that we were stunned. Or somebody would see something and say, oh my God, this WebSphere portal, these little portlets can actually talk to one another. Isn't that amazing? And this is like 2005. And this was technology that had shipped, you know, almost 8 years earlier, and it was a big deal then. And so it's that understanding latency that seems to be also a problem, that people don't necessarily have an intuitive understanding of what's happening in mobile and how fast the devices are growing and all of that, and that, geez, we really got to get on the bandwagon. We have to, like, you're doing a book on iPad for business. And
he's pointing to Julio, by the way.
To Julio. So let me ask you a question about that in terms of people getting it. So iPad for business, are you sensing any kind of demand for people wanting to publish or take advantage of that from a business standpoint or just from a use standpoint right now in this market?
The material in my book falls roughly into two categories. Average people running businesses, large and small, who are embracing the iPad and sort of integrating into their operations. Just today I talked to this company that remodels bathrooms, and before they had been, whenever they visited a client in their home, they'd bring these binders with these printed, you know, tattered printed papers. Now they're taking iPads and using that to sort of show off their product. The other category is people, you know, technical, creative types who see an opportunity to sort of add a product, you know, an app, an accessory to the conversation to sort of improve the iPad ecosystem. And, you know, people in both of these categories are just absolutely going nuts over this device. It's just really amazing.
So you're seeing that here, too. I mean, just in so many different ways. Because, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Lisa, when you go into companies, or Dan, same thing. When you go into companies and you talk about mobile, or you, in your case, Dan, you're also talking about social and other sorts of things that they know they want to get in the game in a new way, and they want to produce an app or a set of services that their market can take advantage of and they can have a competitive advantage. How much education do you have to do in advance before you can talk about the app specifically?
So I think there's kind of a split. When you talk to somebody about buying ads, people think in terms of an ROI. They say, okay, when I buy ads, I want to get $1.01 for every dollar that I spend. I think what people are doing on the social side in particular and in mobile is they're saying, well, we know that there's opportunity here, and so we're going to make a speculative investment. And so, you know, you look at companies that will make an investment in a Facebook application, and they may or may not get a return on that, but it's sort of that creative endeavor. So people are trying to find ways to make these new technologies be multipliers, not just be sort of a, you know, a 10% increase. And so people, you know, there's a lot of griping about, you know, whether they're new things, new things. I think what's happening is that the companies are making these own speculative investments in these interesting spaces. And so the entrepreneurialism actually is kind of happening in there. And that's okay. I think that's great. So, yeah. And so to answer your sort of specific question about how much education, it's a weird mix because some folks don't want to be educated because they don't want to get down into an ROI level because they're trying to figure out where the opportunity is. On the other hand, there's and I'll wrap this up because I know other folks want to say things. There's a lot of people think about these things well. So what is the value of a like? What's the value of an app that can post something onto your stream? And so Garrick introduced me to this thing called Dunbar's number. Typically, a person has about 150 friends in their real life. Well, on Facebook, that's a pretty typical number. And so, if you can get your app to post something to their stream, and then 150 people see that, that has a CPM equivalent. So people are they're being both kind of analytic and looking at what the value of these things are, but they're also not getting so bound up in the I need an instant ROI that they're trying to find oxygen. They're trying to find ways where they really get a multiplier. So I think it's a good spot to be.
I think there's a lot of businesses out there that we're kind of in a, not a dangerous area, but a lot of businesses are suddenly realizing they need a piece of the mobile real estate. They've already learned that they have to have a web presence, and they understand having a website means having their real estate on the internet. Now they want to determine what is mobile, what does it mean to our business going forward. And again, we're going to see probably a bunch of apps that look like their nephew built it out of their garage type of thing, or the way the first websites look. But businesses are, they may not get it 100%, but they're also very afraid that they're going to be left behind if they don't start looking at it. And so they're trying to, and unfortunately, there's a lot of snake oil salesmen still out there, but they're starting to look into applications and what do we do to get our business into mobile, and we think we want to own real estate on mobile. How do we do that? We need to have an app.
All right, so let me ask you the same sort of question, though, about education that I asked these guys, is how much education do you have to do before you can talk to somebody about, let's build a strategy around leveraging location-based apps like Foursquare and using Twitter and so on and so forth? How much enlightenment do you have to do in advance?
A lot of it is tied to their business outcomes that they're looking for. And again, when you go back to marketing and you can come in and talk to the C-suite about, if we have this, how is this going to affect our outcomes? How is this going to affect something I am tasked to do in 2011? How will this help me reach the financial goals I'm supposed to be reaching for this company in 2011? And not every application, of course, as was mentioned earlier, is going to directly correlate to money to the bottom line. But if you can start talking in terms that they understand in their business, they get it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's a level of, once you show them, in fact, we're sitting here in Chino Latino, a Parasole restaurant, and Lisa, your other guest here, and I are working together on a QR code presence for Parasole's restaurant.
Oh, really?
Pretty exciting. That will be tied into mobile applications.
So that's a really good example, I think, and I'm really glad Chris brought that up. I think that's a fantastic example of finding out where a mid-sized enterprise's entry point is. They don't need a master mobile social plan right now, I don't think, although Chris will probably take them there eventually. They need an entry point that they can relate to, that they can afford. On the other end, tomorrow I'm going to be in a very large Twin Cities company that I can't name. They're doing a mobile fair.
She's such a tease.
I'm sorry. They're doing a fair for their company. They're going to have rooms with different vendors there. They're going to have pods of employees circulate through
very
these
smart
companies. We're privileged to be there. Also there tomorrow, Google, Apple, Graystripe. I mean, they've got some fantastic companies. And they're, like I said, it's a larger organization, quite a large organization. And now they're working on really getting their account people, their production, you know, they're saying, you got
to
go
up to speed.
You got to go visit and hear these folks and understand what they offer.
Let's so guess who it is.
No.
Does it start with a B or a G?
give her your beer. We'll get a couple more.
Right, we'll just get a little liquored up. We'll find out.
But I hope we're
going to
see more of that. Yeah.
Listen, in the spirit of the 100th podcast, we probably should kind of catch up with our joint co-founders from way back when, just to find out what everybody is up to. Dan, tell us what you're up to lately. You've done a lot of things since we put together the Minovate gang, but you also did a lot before that. So what have you been doing lately?
Any arrests or anything? Or?
Not that I'm aware
just
of.
Just kidding.
No arrests, thanks. I kind of dropped it already. I started an agency with two of the best Ruby and iPhone folks in town, Pete Schwamm and Tom Bryce. It'd be very kind of self-serving to go on and on about the great work we're doing.
Well, we're giving you that opportunity, Dan. That's okay.
what I basically found is that I'm the Silicon Valley guy who moved back. That's always kind of been my role here. And so for a long time, I had this... the business people wanted to talk to me about tech ideas. And for a long, long, long time, I kind of did that as a community service. And now I'm cashing in on that a little bit.
And rightfully so, right?
It kind of goes to what I was saying before. The Twin Cities has a great, great, great set of tech people. We can build good stuff here. And so I think the real art here is finding a way that you can get people looped into that. It's one thing to write software at a bank. It's another to write software where the software is the business, where it's driving the business. And so all my efforts in the startup community and in my own agency and everything is to try to turn this into a creative endeavor. I like being expressive of that. And so that's what we're doing. It's a lot of fun. It's Drivetrain is the name of the company.
And, wonderful.
Yeah, the Drivetrain Agency is the URL. I don't know.
So do you consider yourself planted now in Minnesota? Will you stay in Minnesota, or is it you kind of leave yourself open to what might be out there?
No, we're definitely here. So my wife and I did the classic Minnesota thing. We moved back when we had kids, and that's okay. The Twin Cities has its own challenges, but it's an incredible opportunity too. There's so much good stuff that's happening here, and it's happening at the interesting level. My thing with Silicon Valley is that I went out there to follow the money, and I stopped having fun. I had the most fun doing little companies and creating kind of greenfield ideas here with small teams, not there with lots of money. And so as a community, we're very well established to set that up. And so I'd rather be here.
Well, listen, I think that we're all honored that you helped get Minovate going. We're also honored that you graced us today with 100. Because, yeah, I mean, you're a busy guy. And just... best of luck on all of that stuff, and thanks very much for being part of this.
Yeah,
and stick around, because I mean, we're going to be here for could be days.
Yeah.
So
hopefully not.
Thanks very much.
Yeah,
Dan, you're a vital member of this community, and thank you very much for the guidance and mentoring that you've done for so many people.
Thanks. You're too kind.
Yeah, well.
Well, and Eric, you and I met. Well, Tim, I met Tim. Based on something
at the same time.
At the same time, based on something.
The original podcasters group.
Yep.
Back in
Podcast 2005,
like 5 years ago.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Wow. And that's where we first met. And you have done so many things since then. You don't want to spend half an hour talking about the last 5 years, but what have you been up to, let's say, in the recent year?
Last July, I launched Currents.com, a web font delivery service. Self-hosted and downloadable.
Which I used the other day. Great site.
Thank you.
Wonderful opportunities there. I think it's great.
I think so, too. Just passed 1,500 fonts. Just added a new foundry. Serving about 200,000 fonts a day. So things are going pretty well on there. And tomorrow, I'm officially starting a new paid offering, so called Currents Constellations, where we take 3 to 5 fonts that work really well together, wrap them up in a really in a sample HTML file, a CSS file that really highlights how those fonts can work well together, and we send it off to the paying members of that service, and it's gotten a lot of really good traction, and I'm really excited about it.
And for those who are listening that don't know, can you talk just briefly about why serving fonts is such a big deal, what the changes are in web browsers that'll bring new fidelity to font rendering?
There's a lot of things here. Primarily, the first one was last year when both Safari and Firefox said, we are going to support this feature that has been in the web technology for more than 10 years. So now we have Safari, Firefox, and Internet Explorer all supporting this technology, but all having, as our web developers know, all having their own nuances and specific ways to implement this and different quirks. And so what Kernis does is minimize those quirks and handle, it's really a compatibility engine. With one line of code, just like you embed a YouTube video into your website, you can now embed a font and hit on refresh, you can see a very distinct difference and know that that font choice is going to be visible to 95% of the people that visit your website. iPads, iPhones, Internet Explorer, everything.
Well, and what's interesting about it, just from my own perspective, is when you initially talked about Kernest, KERNEST.com, for those who want to go check it out, I know I looked at how slowly browsers were evolving and had been for some time and thought, well, I mean, it's moving in that direction, but I don't know how long it's going to take for Garrick to bring that to reality. But it's been interesting to see the leap forward now in HTML5 support with Jobs saying no Flash on the iPad, and all of a sudden all these services immediately flip over to delivering MP4 videos and doing iframes to render and deliver different things. And so, and now Microsoft and IE is going to support HTML5, and even Boxy, the TV offering, went away from the Gecko browser, which Firefox is based on, and embraced WebKit, the engine that drives Safari and Chrome and so on. So the
win I see is actually not in desktop browsers as we see them today, but in a consistency across all marketing materials, both online and off, in terms of brand identity. Whether that be ebooks or websites or iPhone apps or a Boxy app or whatever this thing is, now we can be confident that our brand identity in our brand identity font can be presented consistently across all of that. And that's what I talked about at the recent EMA Summit.
So one quick question. Hope no one died when that just crashed. One quick question that I've been thinking about is, now that Google has made the change that page loading is going to matter for page rank. It's not just page rank anymore, it's the speed with which your pages load. In the past, to match that brand identity, if you're using Futura as your font, you'd have to create a JPEG or a PNG image of that logo.
Don't serve fonts to robots. They don't appreciate them.
That's right. But the point, though, is that delivering the font instead of a graphic of the font, a raster, significantly increases the page load time.
Not necessarily.
Okay, all right.
And if you know that the Googlebot is coming by, and you know the Googlebot is very clear about who it is, just don't serve the font to it. That's one of the things that Kernis does. So the Googlebot isn't going to appreciate your fantastically ornate serif. We don't serve it to it. Okay. So it's not going to impact it. But it may impact it, but not. So, it may impact it if you had a JPEG in there, right? And not only so, it's not even from an SEO perspective that you're using at font face to embed web fonts versus images is better, but from a maintenance standpoint, from a compatibility standpoint, right? Because that image is not going to resize across different browsers or different devices in the way that CSS can be easily resized.
So what about other apps? Like Lisa, are you looking at using font technologies in other apps, or is it kind of a non-issue at this point?
Actually, what we're seeing in the past, it's really been building for the past 6 months, and it appears to be really building to a crescendo right now, is and I have, we're agnostic, you know, we do smartphone app integrations, no problem. But what we're seeing is a real trend toward thinking that perhaps with HTML5 supported by more browsers, it's not universally supported yet, right? But as that continues, that really web apps for everything except graphically intensive and games will become the norm. So you might, your listeners might want to look up a blog post this past Monday in Mobile Beat by a guest poster who basically said overall he believes that downloadable native apps have run their course. With a hat tip to, you know, again, games, graphically intensive.
Things so, actually need the native horsepower.
Exactly, exactly. And now with HTML5 actually able to reach into limited but significant things like location, like your phone for QR scanning. Yeah, meat and potatoes, 80% maybe met by that.
Steve, you spent some time at Adobe, right?
No, not actually at Adobe. I worked with them though when I was at Apple.
Okay, Apple. Fair enough. My bad.
I don't know. The two don't really meet really well together.
They both start with A.
They used to each other way back when.
They used to, back in the day.
Back in the day.
Well, where I wanted to go with this is that I think there's significant opportunity actually going the other direction with HTML5 and using it to drive offline publications.
I concur.
Really? Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting is, I don't know if you all saw something that Adobe Labs just released called Project Roam, which is a Flex-based app and an Air app for creation of all kinds of wonderful stuff. Interactive PDFs, websites, Swift files, you know, all kinds of happy, good stuff. And I looked at that and I thought, wow, this is pretty amazing. And then I thought, yeah, but... You know, at the end of the day, I want to deliver. Graham is holding his iPad here, looking. He's bored, so he's reading.
Not the only thing he's holding.
Beer's
got his beer.
His beer. As being able to have that as a target, being able to deliver that as a target, because a lot of the interactive PDFs don't work very well on the iPad. But I thought that was interesting that you know, Wired does the web is dead issue. A couple of issues ago, and it was all about apps, and then now you're just saying that, well, you know, it may not be that way.
Nobody calls me anymore to make them a CD-ROM using Director.
Go figure.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, just to kind of change gears a little bit, it would not be a Minivate Gang podcast if we didn't reference an Apple product. And here, Phil's initiation.
If we didn't dwell on an Apple.
Oh, okay. So I wanted to bring Julio back in to talk about that MacBook Air he was had on the table.
Yeah, what'd you do with that? Yeah.
Julio, you tell us a little bit about, obviously, about that particular thing, but also tell us a little bit about what else is new in tech, what else you're seeing out there, and as we move forward. Because I know that you have to get on your way, and we want to make sure we tap your brain for everything we can.
Well, the most interesting thing I'm involved in right now is comparing the iPad, which I've been using very extensively, with the MacBook Air, which just came out. I played with the 11-inch for a little while before I had to send it back to Apple. And I just got my hands on a Galaxy Tab. And I'm just at a very interesting point right now where I'm making three-way comparisons between these devices, between the 10-inch tablet and the 7-inch tablet, between the 10-inch tablet and the 11-inch laptop, sort of trying to figure out, you know, what are the right scenarios for each of those devices, you know, which types of users will gravitate towards one device than the other. It's really interesting. We're just at the very beginning of tablet wars. Tablet wars are just about to erupt. And at the same time, these very interesting laptops are coming out. Like, I have an Acer laptop at the office. It's basically a netbook-sized laptop, but the problem with netbooks until now has been that they've been very underpowered. But this has a Core i7 processor, the Acer Timeline X, and then the 11-inch MacBook Air. Some very interesting devices are just beginning to emerge right now, and so the whole whole computing scenario is just becoming very interesting.
So let me ask you this question, because I don't know in terms of the user interface on the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. The MacBook Air, of course, you can have multiple windows open and all of that, and you all know that there's been all the studies that have come out about how, you know, at the end of the day, guess what? Bad news. Humans really can't multitask very well. That we have to keep all these cognitive slots open if we're multitasking, you know, in case something comes up. So,
and basically, they don't all own Apple products. I know, yeah. It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
But when I
think about the iPad and the fact that you have one thing in front of your face, even when it goes multitasking, quote unquote, with iOS 4.2, which should come out this week, you still only have one app in front of your face. On a MacBook Air, you can have multiple windows, multiple tabs in windows, multiple applications running, and so on. So you got to keep all those cognitive slots open. What about the Galaxy? Is that a single app in front of you? Is it multiple apps that can run concurrently? Or what's the paradigm?
Well, the Galaxy Tab, I don't know what it will be 6 or 12 months from now, but right now it's just basically an oversized Galaxy S smartphone.
Okay.
Which is not necessarily bad. Like, for instance, I was sitting on the bus with the Galaxy Tab, and you can do the thumb typing on the Galaxy Tab wonderfully, which is not really possible with the iPad. And the fact that the Galaxy Tab is just slightly larger means that you have better accuracy on the virtual keyboard. And you have the haptic feedback. I got to tell you, I'm having a blast with this device. Angry Birds is on there. And if you love Android, if you love the Galaxy S class handsets, this is going to be a wonderful device. But the downside is the Galaxy Tab exists in this somewhat murky area between a tablet and a phone. It's very clear cut. You know, with Apple, you can have your iPhone and then you can have your tablet. But the decision making that involves whether you're going to buy a Galaxy Tab is a little more complicated. Because if you already have an Android phone, do you really need the Galaxy Tab? Does the Galaxy Tab add something else that's really worth the money? I don't know.
Yeah.
How is it as an e-reader? That would be what I would use something like that for. And what do you think of Steve Jobs saying that 7-inch tablets are dead on arrival?
Well, again, oversized Galaxy S tablets, you're basically running the stock Amazon app, but the text is a little bigger, so it's a little easier to read. Steve Jobs on the whole 7-inch screen thing, can I swear?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a podcast for Christ.
Oh, take the clean tab off.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, Steve Jobs is full of shit, and the obvious response is, look at all the creativity that has gone into iPhone apps. So he's just basically spouting bullshit until Apple comes out with its own 7-inch tablet. He does that all the time. He says, you know, this is crap, until he comes out with the very same thing, you know, a year or 2 years later. So,
have you seen the Nook Color? Which is 7-inch Android tablet, but it's locked down even more than the iPad is from a ability to install apps, etc. It's a very curated experience just for e-reading.
That's Barnes and Noble, right?
Right. Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it, but I'm really looking forward to it. But I think that's an LCD.
Yes.
But they're coming out with color e-ink that, you know, that exists. That's coming. So that's very interesting. I'm very interested to see that.
Well, here's what's interesting. When I think about
everybody
sit there and, okay, yeah, you'll be the judge of that.
You know what, Phil?
Anyway, is the fact that mobile is the primary driver behind a lot of the excitement and a lot of the changes. I mean, the stuff that you're doing, Chris, you're obviously focused on, what you guys are doing. But
really isn't. I mean, it really, mobile's always been the driver. I mean, everything from moving from the PC to a laptop, that was a mobility issue.
Well,
it's always been a mobility issue.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. But Graham and I yesterday were at the Verizon wireless 4G rollout or announcement, really, not a launch. I didn't know all the acronyms, and they were talking about the IMS Core, which was video services and messaging and all this stuff. And of course, now I learn after the fact that it's IP multimedia services. You know, I looked it up on my iPad while we were sitting there.
So you say you don't know what ARPU stands for?
Right. But the point is that when I think about what's going to happen with mobile devices and the number that'll come out, I mean, I would love to see 57, 7-inch, 10-inch tablet devices come out and more phones, and it means everybody will have them. But what's really exciting to me is the fact that we're going to have the bandwidth to be able to actually do stuff.
And now for a commercial break, since we are in the Midwest, brought to you by Reality. Reality, 78% of people have non-smartphones. Reality, last quarter, over 75% of mobile device sales were non-smartphones. That's why we're so hot on the mobile web. 65% of 18 to 29 year olds, 65% are surfing the web via mobile. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy.
But by the same token, the smartphone market I just read grew at 85%.
But here's the reality.
I grew at 85% yesterday.
And don't forget, this is when we talked before about businesses, about educating them.
Yeah.
This is Target's reality. This is General Mills' reality. So,
it still comes to technology as much as any of you.
And when we talk about investors and when we talk about businesses buying our stuff, we have to remember that's their reality.
It still comes, the best way to communicate mobily is still, the default thing is still SMS.
Non-glamorous as it is, as
ugly as it is, that's the way people talk and communicate right now.
You know, I'm actually glad.
It's still the primary function is to make a call.
Well, yeah, but even that's
although
getting a backseat to text.
Although, Chris, carrier revenue from voice is plummeting, which I find fascinating. 60% of mobile use is in-home.
Which is great for the iPhone, because then they don't have to worry about the AT&T issue.
Right. Well, it's interesting that you bring up the reality check, because I had a client, and I was compelled to contact a group called Tremor, which is an in-house captive Procter & Gamble agency.
Oh yeah.
And the president of the agency, they were going to spin it out, and they decided to keep it in-house, had 250,000 influencers, 16 to 23, I think, was the age range, each of whom had an average of 25 contacts. This is a couple years ago now, so that was pretty significant even at that time. And so I asked them point blank, without revealing all of your strategies and your capabilities, what sorts of ways do you reach out to these young people to have them take on a product and learn about the product and all that? And he said, what do you do digitally? Do you email them? And he says, no, actually we don't do anything digitally. I said, what? He goes, no, we don't email them or SMS it. We actually send them something in the mail or ship them a box via UPS. I said, are you serious? He goes, yeah. And we send them letters and we send them cards, and because they don't get any. Nobody else does that.
It's a novelty.
It's a novelty, but it's also one where, as he said, we can't count on the Target technology because it's not necessarily there yet, which I found to be really, and that just really reinforces what you were saying.
Not only is it not there yet, but there's a pretty good chance that who's ever driving that technology tomorrow will change their mind on what they're going to support. So there's good reason for big brands to not be jumping in with head first on this stuff.
Yeah.
And actually, the far more interesting application is in the far more simpler technology.
Yep. Well, when we started this podcast a couple of years ago, the original...
This very podcast?
Right. The original,
we have been along here a long time.
Had only been out for a few months.
Mm-hmm. What had been?
The original iPhone.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Android hadn't yet really launched yet. It was later in the year. Now we're here 2 years later, and you know, we have all these mobile devices. There's different tablets coming out, all this stuff. Where do we think we're going to be in 2 more years now? We're doing our 200th podcast, and I'm from a mobile perspective.
Yeah. It's been interesting for me to watch over the past couple years people, I think, really badly serve coverage of the mobile area with the iPhone versus Android meme, which I think is really not worthwhile. Yep. What's fascinating to me about Google's rapid, I was just reading today, they're now 25% of all smartphones. Think about it. If Android can take that kind of share in that little time, anybody can. These things are out of contract. You work off your carrier subsidy of your $600 device purchase, let's be honest. In 2 years, it gets recycled. Whatever's hot now, it could be XYZ in 2 years. You know, so to me, you have to think about
We talk about the death of BlackBerry. We talk about the shrinking share of Nokia. We talk about all of that sort of a thing. But it could turn in a heartbeat.
Exactly.
It could turn in a heartbeat.
Well, and you know, our pal Ray Kurzweil, who wrote The Singularity Is Near, wrote all about exponential change and about accelerating change and the fact that cycles were being compressed and things were happening faster. And he was talking about companies that you would see that would go to $1 billion and zero in 3 years. That they would come on, they would just explode into the marketplace, and then they'd go away because they wouldn't have follow-ons and they wouldn't be able to hang on to that critical mass.
On to that. The first thing is, I'm still holding on my long bet on Wi-Fi to take over all cellular spectrum.
Okay.
Well, the line between Wi-Fi and cellular seems to be... Is it? You really feel it's that clear?
Wi-Fi is completely ad hoc and open. Why, cellular is, I'm paying a monthly service, I'm paying somebody some money to do this. If I can walk around, we're Chino Latino. There's an open Wi-Fi network. Does it support voice? I don't know, but it could. If it does, why do you need a monthly, why do you need an AT&T contract?
Yeah. And I think what's going to retard that is twofold. One is the carriers are going to fight that tooth and nail.
They just announced 4G.
I'm just saying. They will fight to retain that average revenue per user, ARPU. Their voice revenue is going down, as we mentioned before. Their data revenue, by the way, is going up 25% year over year. That's very good revenue for them. So they'll stay, in my opinion, one step ahead of the law, right? They'll grudgingly stay one step ahead of that following trend to keep Graham on their stuff.
Sure.
To keep
just like Time Warner wants to keep him on their cable subscription.
Right. I'll tell you what I find a fascinating trend, the carriers fighting commoditization, is mobile payments for mobile. Verizon, a few months ago, announced a test that they're going to do in Salt Lake City, I believe Austin, Minneapolis, and one other city, for proximity payments, for small payments. There's also a fascinating move by a huge international teleco services provider called Amdocs. They're going to provide what's called in-app monetization. And what that means in English is, Graham sees that L.L. Bean shirt that he really likes on his iPad or on his iPhone, and he says, yeah, I want to buy that for $19.95. Put that on my next month's bill, my carrier bill.
Right. Yeah.
So those are ways that I think you're going to see the carriers
monetize in a big way and fight to be in there. So what about, and Julio, you probably know about this too, is especially with Apple just buying the headphone company, right?
I think that's a false rumor.
Do you? Yeah. Okay. All right.
Unicorn.
Well, there's just been an extension of the Wi-Fi standard called Wi-Fi Direct. And I know, in a practical example, I used to connect my MacBook with my iPhone so I could use the Keynote remote on the iPhone to be able to drive my slides. The problem was, if my iPhone couldn't get a Wi-Fi connection and my laptop couldn't get a Wi-Fi connection, so I'd burn up two slots, I couldn't do it because it didn't work with Bluetooth. But with Wi-Fi Direct, I could just have the two of them handshake and talk to one another. Or I could walk into my office and or anywhere around my Wi-Fi router and print to my wireless printer without Bonjour, as an example. And so I was really excited about Wi-Fi Direct until I mentioned this to Graham earlier, FireSheep, which is the Firefox browser plugin that allows you to troll for session data and basically pull up somebody sitting in here on their laptop. You can surf and follow along and you can snag all their stuff going through the air. Now all of a sudden I went out finally and looked at VPN solutions today to say I've got to go with a VPN.
We need to talk, let's talk next week.
Really?
I got a new project.
Okay. I would like to, seriously. Because I think wireless security is going to be a big deal. That people really are not aware of how much danger they're at. So, well, it's getting pretty noisy in here, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, where's the recession?
Yeah, exactly.
This place is packed.
Well, you know what? It's packed for one reason and one reason only. All the magic that Chris Lauer's doing with driving marketing. So what are you doing with these guys?
We started about 6 months ago doing social media consulting with all the Parasoleil restaurant properties and brands. Hopefully we've taught them a few things or two about how to behave and engage with their customers. Our biggest things, though, is just like any other brand out there, they don't maybe want to be the first into an area, but they want to have something solid and something cool to match their brand. And it's very interesting with Parasoleil working with, they have brands such as Manny's, where that crowd's definitely not
traditional,
hip, and yeah, on their smartphone.
They're not checking in at Manny's.
They're not, yeah. Well, some are, but some yeah. The amount of difference between that versus the crowd here at Chino Latino is vastly different. We're looking into QR codes to tie into, especially restaurants is a large area of our practice at Sterling Cross Communications. A big thing for restaurants this year, whether or not it comes from legislation or from peer pressure, is to start putting nutritional value on menus or on menu boards. The problem with that, again, it comes to square footage as to McDonald's may not be able to actually have all that information published right next to each item on the menu board, but yet through the power of things like QR codes that have come out, people are able to obtain that information now
by just scanning,
scanning the code. And if they want the information, if they want to know gluten-free information, if they want to know restaurant reviews and things like that, it's all being tied into one functionality. And again, we talked earlier about the what is the future going to hold. The clients I'm dealing with see these handheld devices as being the new way of computing. And they realize, too, especially it's an interesting fact that the CEOs themselves acknowledge that they're not their own audience when it comes to that. They're not the part of the user group, nor do they ever want to be part of the user group. And the CEOs themselves are admitting, I have a person I've placed in charge of that. That person needs to be the one. It's been a little discussion here in the Twin Cities market. Many marketers are bemoaning the fact that there's not a C-level buy-in of social media. Well, there is a C-level buy-in. They understand it. They understand they need to accept it. They're just not the ones that want to execute it, nor do they feel it's their best interest and or time to sit in on learning or embracing those tools. They will out of their own personal curiosity. But again, when we're getting into, even with Parasoleil, Phil Roberts famously told me when I first approached him to talk to him about Twitter, he said, I don't tweet, and Burger Jones has damn good pie. And literally, that was his message that he wanted to go out. Because we set him up a Twitter account. We wanted to get him on Twitter. And what do you want to say on there? I don't tweet. And there's damn good pie. That's Phil. And you know and love Phil for his personality. And he says often more blue words than that. But I figure that's safe for a podcast audience. It's fun. We're really working with Foursquare. As we've chatted before, I happen to have a book coming out on that area, checking into Foursquare, and this is actually, some of your discussion has been perfect because Foursquare itself could not have existed or come about at this time if several different technologies also hadn't developed at the same time. If there wasn't a mobile internet already ready, if there wasn't geolocation in place that could happen, if there wasn't the mobile devices, and if there wasn't a carrier system, as you talked about, that supports all of these tools, it's kind of like the perfect storm that actually created a service like Foursquare and some of these other tools that are coming out.
I politely disagree. Foursquare's been around for like 10 years. It's in its second incarnation.
What was the
Dodgeball. Well, but
and then they killed it or something.
Not with the current usage and utilities that it has available to it. And because of the fact that where I see it and where my clients are really enjoying it, being in the retail, hospitality, restaurant space, is that in hotels, you get the communication aspect of Twitter. You get the ability to favorite something like Facebook. You get the ability to write tips and comments like Yelp. You get the ability to tie in a geolocation format. And then you wrap it all up with the gameplay of unlocking badges and things like that. You've created kind of a great dynamic that's really caused the momentum. Foursquare just passed 4 million users, and they're on a growth pace faster than Twitter at this point in time. And as we mentioned numbers earlier, well, there's this huge opportunity, and not a lot of people are getting smartphones yet. Well, if they can grow a million users in 2 months off of that type of growth, imagine what happens when more and more people are getting smartphones, how many users there will be. So yeah. I think we're still on the cusp of what's happening with that. Foursquare itself is about to enter a next level of development and have more features and benefits that are going to roll out, some of which are fantastic and have everything to do with mobile. Some actually have nothing to do with mobile and are actually, what they're saying, are offline promotions available with Foursquare, where they're tying into the traditional and physical realm of people being in locations.
That could kill them. That could kill them. Isn't the whole purpose of Foursquare to be mobile and to be active? And you know, if you move it offline,
no,
don't they get in? Is that losing focus on what their prime directive is as far as
not
as an
talking
entity?
To the founders of Foursquare, their belief is that Foursquare has always been best developed by the users, and that these guys who came up with Foursquare or who initiated it, they're not going to be the ones in control of the end product. Foursquare is best when it's developed and used and improved or perfected by the user community out there. And if somebody wants to have a Foursquare swarm party, for instance, we tie that in with Parasol A and Chino Latino, being able to do a swarm party, which is ties in the Foursquare badge, where if people check in, and Foursquare can track all these. A swarm, meaning that you can have 50 people show up and unlock a swarm badge. Well, as incentive for that, if you give away drinks and t-shirts and physical prizes, you're actually driving online activity with an offline product. And so it's truly becomes a richer experience when it can live in the real world as it is and not just be a virtual. And again, that's how Facebook and these other platforms got spread, was because deep down people want to be social. Whether that means they get out of their basement and come out and meet people face to face, Foursquare seems to be a tool that's best suited for that crowd that's going to the retail, restaurant, and hospitality market.
Don't they really have their work cut out for them, though? Because Facebook Places just launched on Android last week. They've got 600-700 million users, et cetera. So you don't think so? You don't think that Facebook's gonna kind of eat in on that business?
Foursquare is eating against any established existing loyalty program that any established restaurant may have. What's worse about that is they don't own the users. Foursquare does. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. My biggest comeback against anybody who says, well, isn't Facebook going to be a killer? And it's like, well, has Facebook actually had success doing that against Twitter or against other apps and tools that are already in place? Facebook tends to work best when they play nice with their neighbors. I know there may be a personal thing between the Facebook owners and Foursquare, because Foursquare specifically told them no thanks when Facebook came with their checkbook and armored cars to make an offer on Foursquare. But I think all that aside, Facebook, yes, they went ahead and launched Facebook Places. Recently, they launched Facebook Deals because Facebook Places was a huge flop, and they weren't able to offer specials and awards, or businesses weren't buying into Facebook Places as a business tool, like several companies are already. I mean, if we're talking about market share and mind share of how to get your social media tool in front of corporate agencies, Foursquare is above and beyond winning that war of gaining that mind share.
Do you have a Foursquare business card?
No. Well, we should point out that, that Chris is working on a book with Foursquare, and that's out, right? I mean, that's done. And,
it's available for pre-sale right now, but it's not the physical book is not available. You can find it on BarnesandNoble.com and on Amazon.com.
Cool.
But we specifically took Foursquare into the realm and kept it into the realm of specifically for retail and restaurant management, because that's where this is an ideal tool for businesses that are in that space to market to their consumers. Is Foursquare the best solution for every company out there? I don't think so. Is Foursquare going to reach every audience and be good for business to business? Maybe. But in the business consumer model, where it's a social business based on locations and driving people to places, and then the next level is going to be driving people to product, that's going to be the game changer for a B2C business playing with social media.
Well, and you know, it's I find it to be really amusing the times that I check in and I get stuff, and I've actually gotten two from you that pop up and say, hey, you know, come on over to Baja Soul. Of course, they're out of business now, but come on over to Baja Soul for a margarita or whatever. No, just in Eden Prairie.
Well, I just want you to know. Actually in the Eden Prairie Center.
Oh, they moved.
Yeah.
Okay.
All you bastards, I set up the 100th podcast at Chino Latino location, so be sure to check in before you leave.
Well, I'll definitely check in. Okay. Absolutely.
We had a chance to talk about mobile, we've talked about Foursquare, we've talked about the startup community. This being the 100th podcast of Minivate, I think we would be remiss if we did not dwell a little bit on ourselves and talk a little bit about some of the high points and low points of the Minivate Gang podcast over the last few years.
Okay. Well, who wants to go first? Graham, you want to go first?
Yeah, before Garrick splits. Yes. Before Garrick splits. Garrick, thank you very much.
Thanks for coming, buddy.
Being part of Minivate.
Yes. And being
one of the seeds that we sowed to grow this, and whether you want to take credit for that or not.
Well, I remember the last time I was on one of these, I was fighting with a young child.
You're exactly what you were doing.
I'm on my way off to do the exact same thing. I'm measuring my time with Minivate in children.
Yeah. So, question, did the child services have to come out that day? Just kidding.
They're still figuring out Google Maps.
Again, we're honored to have you here. You are an integral part of the community, that community here in Minneapolis, and what you do means a great deal to not only us, but people around, and so nothing but the best to you and success.
I hope that I'll be on shortly to talk about one of the two upcoming projects that I'm very excited about. So.
You know, it's not that tough to get on Minivate.
I just have to find one of your emails.
Send us an email over there.
Or do I have to find a Q code? I don't know what I'm
doing. No, you just send it to us. You're there.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Bill. So, Graham, tell me, tell us your high point of Minivate podcast and your low point of Minivate podcast.
Well, I don't know that there's, you know, the thing that strikes me, I don't know if there's a high point or low point, but out of 100, we've done almost all of them virtually via Skype.
Yeah.
We've only been together for maybe 5 or 6. Not a lot. You know, we did one at a social media breakfast downtown, I remember, on the river, where we
did
were
one
together.
At Summit. Yeah, that was probably the most organized.
I might have missed that one, though. I missed some of these.
I think you did miss.
Yeah, but it's fun to do them together, but I think of all the ones that I did in various places, like up at the cabin and over in Wisconsin. God, was I on one from Southern California?
Yes, you were.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, so it's pretty amazing to me, first of all, that Steve can do such a great job of putting these things together.
Thank you.
And making them look so good and sound so good when we're just connected virtually over Skype. And sometimes it's over iPhone in many cases. where I've been on an iPhone or the guest has been on a phone. And
or you've been stealing Wi-Fi in your car somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love those.
Yeah,
I love those.
I've never been outside of a Dunn Brothers one time.
I love those metal pictures of you guys doing that.
Positioning my car in such a... Yeah, yeah, and then I think one time I had my car window down. And Steve said, "What's that noise?" It was a car driving by, and I went, "Oh, yeah, sorry."
You've done it before outside of a cafe
up in Minnesota. Pequot Lakes.
And doing it with the rain coming down.
So. Yes, yeah, yeah.
So, Tim, you know, fellow Lakevillian.
Tim, tell us your highest.
Yes.
What do you remember as the best and the worst of the Minnesota game?
Well, the worst was the day that I thought it was Thursday when it was Friday, and I totally missed the podcast.
That wasn't very long ago.
That's all right. We talked about that. That was about 2 weeks ago.
That wasn't good.
We've all been there. We've all done that.
High point. What's been the high point?
That's just, talking about tech in this town, I think, is great. Doing it on a regular basis. Doing it with guys that I like to talk with, I think that's just great. So I'm really happy to be a part of the gang, and hopefully we can keep going to another couple hundred episodes before we hang it up or whatever.
Lose our teeth.
Well, I think it has to do with the amount of innovation here in town. If that dries up, then there's not a lot for us to talk about. So
we were at one point we were all called icons in the tech industry here in Minnesota. And I don't know if that's good. Is that good? Is that bad? Is it?
It depends on what kind
icon
of icon.
Mean old.
It's better than martyr. That's
sure.
Well, I'd say the low point for me was a time when you, Phil, were actually doing a lot of the questioning, and I turned the volume down and left my office because I was not feeling well. And no one ever knew. That was the low point of the podcast for me.
And a high point for all of us, because we never knew.
Phil just kept going like nothing happened.
Yeah. Like I need coaxing to talk, right?
Well, and for me, the high point is, I don't have a single high point. There are a couple of things that stand out. One is when I pick a piece of music, and you guys either really like it or you give me rations of shit about it. Either one, I love it. But also, there are some times when, and I still haven't figured out why, there are some times when the show is so easy and it flows and it's just nice and smooth, and then other times where it's like, you know, we're sitting in the dentist chair, four of us, and he's got pliers, and he's pulling out our teeth one at a time.
Well, it's so hard when we can't see each other's eyes. I mean, when we're doing them virtually, we're stepping on each other's eyes. That's the hardest part for me is, you know, I never quite know when to jump in, you know, because we can't see each other.
Yeah.
But they come out remarkably well. I don't know how many gaps you take out, but...
Not very many, surprisingly.
Yeah, you haven't had to do all that much editing, I don't think. But. Yeah,
we consider them dramatic pauses.
Yes. Yeah. Pregnant pauses.
Exactly. Yeah.
We've had plenty of those.
Well, yeah, and I think that, you know, the high point for me has been, the low point has been the times that I've missed, because I really enjoy talking to, you know, my three comrades in this sort of venture. The high point has been the fact that we continue to do this out as a labor of love. I mean, so far, we haven't gone down the path of trying to sell advertising. We haven't gone down the path of sponsorship. It is still a labor of love.
Clear Channel hasn't called you, have they?
They don't return our calls.
They want to syndicate worldwide.
We continue to get together, much to the chagrin of our families and wives, getting together on a Friday morning or a Saturday morning. And let me tell you, the Friday morning did a world of good to save my life.
Yep.
But we continue to do it because we love it, and we continue to do it because we're passionate about what goes on in the social media space, in the tech space, in the interactive space, and in the web development space.
And our love for Minnesota.
And, you know, we all love this state, we love this area, and it never ceases to give us fodder for the podcast, good and bad. And I enjoy the high point is definitely getting together and just talking about whatever the topic is. And yeah, sometimes it is a challenge to talk about, you know, what the hell's going on. Well, we don't really know, but
nothing's happening this week.
And nothing could be happening.
So let's talk about what we think Apple might do.
And we right, exactly.
Well, there's that seems to be the default. Happening.
Let's talk Apple.
Yeah. Let's talk about Mike Garrington.
Right. And also you've got to. It's been incredible to meet and talk to these entrepreneurs, these people that are passionate about what they do, and whether it succeeds eventually or not, they work hard. And they're willing to talk to us about it. And I think about the guys that had watermelon sauce and the Scribbles bit that we talked about. I think about bringing Chris Lauer on and Lisa Foote, who's turned into such a great resource for mobile and what's going on in that space. It's just been a great venture.
And then at the end of the day, we wouldn't do it if no one listened. And so this is a shout out and a thank you to everybody who's listening to this and has listened to other podcasts we've done. And that, I, in some ways, is the ultimate payoff and the ultimate high point is to, be at a mini demo or an unsummit or a blog conference and have somebody come up and say, you sound just like you do on the podcast.
Right.
Oh, you listen?
Yeah,
I do.
Oh, you're the one.
Well, and it's steadily grown, which has been great. To the fact that if we had all of our listeners in this restaurant, we couldn't possibly hold everybody. So that's a joy to know that there's that many people that are willing to listen to us chat for an hour. And so thank you.
Well, listen, I think we all echo that. Thank you very much to our listeners for joining us each and every week. And those weeks that we miss, thank you very much for that. I think we would all be remiss if we didn't say thank you very much to Steve. Thank you very much, Steve Borsch, for
thank
what you,
you
do.
You.
Steve is always very gracious about sharing the spotlight and sharing the founding of Mitivate with many. All of us, with Dan, with Garrick. But to tell you the truth, Mitivate would not continue to run. Mitivate podcast would not be produced if it wasn't for the passion and the enthusiasm of Steve Borsch moving it forward.
Thanks for
saying that. We tell him that on a fairly regular basis over food, over coffee, whenever we get together. But I think it needs to be said that Mitivate would not be Mitivate without Steve Borsch. And thank you very much, Steve, for that. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
So with that said, that's 100.
That's 100.
So what the hell's going to happen to 101?
We have no idea yet.
We're going to be back on Skype. A lot less background noise.
Probably so.
Yeah. There's just so many interesting things happening in the Minnesota technology community, though. It just continues to amaze me. And I've said this many times. When we started this thing, we kind of thought that between the six of us and now the four of us that have been the regulars ongoing, that, early on we kind of thought, well, we probably know pretty much everything that's going on in this town. And it constantly amazes us that the things we discover that none of us knew of. And let me tell you, I'm working with a lot of these startups in the really early stages, and it doesn't stop. It just keeps coming. And there is some really cool stuff coming out there. And knock on wood, some of these guys are going to be able to get the resources together and the funding to keep it rolling and build their teams out. But there's a lot of great future guests that are waiting in the wings for sure. So
yep,
there'll be no shortage of good stuff to cover going forward.
A little bit on business coming up. We've got WordCamp, which comes up on Saturday.
Tim and I are doing a session.
I'll be there.
Camp.
I'm looking forward to seeing you guys. We have social media breakfast scheduled for November 19th.
Yep.
We're talking mobile, so that should be an interesting thing. Anything else you guys can think of right off the top? You're off to Defrag.
Off to Defrag next week, where there'll be a bunch of Minnesota folks, and I'll be live blogging that. So I'll come back with some interesting stuff, learning more about tech stars out there, which started in Boulder, and it'll be my fourth year at that event, so I'm looking forward to that. Let's see, what else is coming up in Minnesota? Anybody think of any other events?
There's that Thanksgiving Christmas thing, but other than that,
conferences drop off.
They do.
But yeah.
Steve, if you don't mind, before we go, I do want to take a minute, because this is the first time we've had a chance to be together and to be on the podcast since we lost Luke Buckland. And I wanted to say, from Minovate to the Buckland family, to everybody at the Nerdery, that our thoughts and prayers are with you, and we are deeply saddened by the loss of Luke, who is, as we discussed in a post not too long ago, a very vital member. What he's crafted has become very vital to the growth of technology and web interactive here in Minnesota.
Yep.
He leaves a big legacy, and there's a memorial service on Saturday at Christ Presbyterian in
Edina,
70
on Highway 100.
Yep.
But on a happier note, we'll be back next week with another podcast number 101.
All right. Thank you very much.